The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, JV. Thanks for being here. We're looking forward to a great show tonight. We've got returning guest Lon Strickler joining us. He is the authority on winged cryptids, particularly winged humanoid cryptids. As most of you know who've listened to this program for some time, you know that one of my favorite topics is the Mothman story. Well, the Mothman is one of those winged humanoid cryptids, and we're going to talk a little bit about Mothman, but we're going to talk more intensely about sightings that are more contemporary, more recent than the Mothman sightings of what now, 60 years ago almost? No, 50 years ago anyway, right? Do my math. Yeah, 53 years ago or so. And Lon has written extensively about the topic, so it's going to be a great discussion. I'm looking forward to it. The best way to participate in any of it, if you're new to the show, is to go to the YouTube channel and subscribe. Just look for JV Johnson on YouTube, and when you find it, hit the subscribe button, and you will automatically then be part of our online community. You can also hit the notification icon that allows you to know, be notified when we go live with our live stream or when we upload bonus content. And then also find the podcast version of the show that's available on all major podcast distribution platforms. And the podcast version is Beyond Reality Paranormal, just in case it's a little uncertain. Beyond Reality Paranormal is the podcast, name of the podcast. And those downloads are terrific, and thank you to everybody who listens. I think I mentioned the other night we've got listeners all around the world of the podcast, and that's really exciting. I'd love to hear more from our international listeners. I would really like to know what some of these topics mean to an international community. I'd like to know what we're going to be talking about tonight, winged humanoids. Maybe you've got local legends surrounding some of these topics. We wouldn't know about them necessarily. I mean, certain people do, and we talk about some of this stuff, but you probably have a better handle on it, and we'd like to know about it. So send an email to our producer and let us know about this one. Maybe we'll be able to get in contact with you and get some more information about it. It's Slick Eddie Edwards, and that's the email address, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled E-D-D-Y. Slick Eddie Edwards at gmail.com. That's the way to get in touch with us. I'd love to hear from our international listeners. Let's see. We've got a full night of discussion about winged cryptids tonight, so we're going to get right to it. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we will start our discussion with Lon Strickler, returning guest tonight on Beyond Reality. Please support the program. Go to patreon.com/johaw. That's J-O-H-A-W. We've got a terrific conversation ready to take place tonight. Our guest is a returning guest. Lon Strickler is a Fortean researcher, also an author. Really one of the experts on winged cryptids. In fact, many variations of cryptids as well. His website is phantomsandmonsters.com. He's got a number of books to his credit, including the recently published Winged Cryptids, Humanoids, Monsters, and Anomalous Creatures Casebook. So we're going to be talking about all of that. Lon, welcome back to Beyond Reality. It's a real honor to have you back here tonight. Okay, Lon, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
There you are. Hey, it's an honor to have you back with us tonight. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I love talking about this particular topic. And as I mentioned in my opening segment, one of my favorite topics to talk about at all is the Mothman story. And we're going to get into that a little bit, but you've got other sightings that you want to talk about, things that are more recent, more contemporary. But before we get into that, one of the things that I really just want to say I'm a bit jealous of is that you grew up and have returned to the Gettysburg, Pennsylvania area. That is such a beautiful part of the country, and I'm such a fan of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something you don't appreciate, I guess, when you're young. But when you pack up, move out, and you're away for almost 40 years, then come back, you appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah, it's just beautiful country. You guys have a nice mix of seasons too. I'm up in upstate New York. We've got a pretty harsh winter that seems to last 8-9 months at times. You guys are a little more moderate than us, but I do love Gettysburg. In fact, I've been keeping an eye on the website for the Gettysburg Bike Week, and I'm hoping that event is still on for July, given everything that's going on around us. Because I went last year, and it's just such a great time.
Well, they're opening the park up tomorrow, and you know, they're going to be doing limited tours. So
that's a good sign.
We have to wait and see. I mean, you know, it's basically the lifeblood of this part of the country. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I sympathize with that because I'm in Cooperstown, New York. Our life's blood is baseball tourism, and they've already canceled. It's called the Cooperstown Dreams Park, and it's a facility that hosts something like 96 youth teams a week, plus all of their families, and none of them will be coming this year. So we're looking at a very, very quiet summer in Cooperstown, New York, and it's going to hurt a lot of the businesses. But that's not what we're here to talk about. When did you start becoming interested in cryptids of any kind?
Well, you know, first of all, I was involved with, you know, looking at spirits and hauntings and such. I did that for a long time. Even after high school, I got into doing that back in the 70s. And, you know, back then when you're a paranormal, you tell somebody you're a paranormal investigator, they look at you like you're kind of weird. But it's not like it is today.
Right.
But in 1981, I had an encounter with a Bigfoot in Sykesville, Maryland.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and that is what kind of set it off for me. I was aware of Bigfoot, you know, I've heard of it, you know, but by that time I was mostly into just UFOs and hauntings. So, you know, when that occurred, I really jumped in head first with it and started doing my own personal investigations. Then I also had a winged humanoid encounter in 1988. So, and that's in the book, described in the book. And that really got me into the Mothman phenomena and, you know, winged humanoids. And ever since then, I've really been interested in it.
Yeah. So tell me about this Bigfoot encounter, which really kicked off a lot of this for you. Was it a face-to-face encounter? Was it noises? Was it a full presence? What happened?
Well, this was in May 9th, 1981. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I was on the south branch of the Patapsco River fly fishing. And I was standing in the river, and I noticed across the river in the weeds there was a dog moving in and out. You know, I just didn't pay him any mind. So when I heard the dog yelp, then I looked over again. And when that happened, something large and hairy stood up in the weeds.
Ooh.
And when I looked at it, now I was maybe about, oh, I don't know, maybe 25 to 30 yards from it at this point. So when it stood up, I just see it from maybe mid-torso up, because the weeds were so high and thick. But it moved to my left, walked out of the weeds, and was standing there looking at me.
Mm.
And it was definitely a male. It was about 7 foot, very broad-shouldered, had a lot of hair all over the body. But the face was what I described as Neanderthal looking. It looked more human than it did like an ape. And I guess we locked glances for between 5 and 10 seconds. And I had waders on, so I wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And this thing just turned on a dime and walked up into the woods. And when that occurred, you know, of course, I thought maybe this might have been a Bigfoot. I don't know what I thought it was at the time. You know, my jaw was hanging in the water by then. And I got up, you know, got out of the water, got into my car, and I drove into town, which was about less than a mile away from where I was. Got on the phone and called the local police. Well, they told me, go back to where it happened, and we'll have somebody meet you there. Well, it was no more than a three or four minute drive back. Mm-hmm. And when I got back, they already had a barrier across the road, and there was a Maryland State Police officer standing there.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I pulled up, I told him, I said, look, I'm the one who made a call. They told me, you know, come back here. Well, he said, you can't be here. You got to turn around and leave. And I kind of argued with him a bit, but I turned around and went back home. So, I lived in Sykesville at the time. I lived right there. So I went ahead and went home, stayed at home about an hour. Then I got curious, so I decided to go on back. So I drove back. And, I mean, there were cars everywhere. I mean, this place was packed with people. When I finally parked and walked up to the barrier, there was a Howard County police officer standing there then. And I asked him what was going on. And he said, kind of laughingly, said somebody saw a Bigfoot. Well, I didn't tell him I was the one who made the report. So I just stood there and watched. And look, they had people going in and out everywhere. They had dogs with them. I'd say there were probably five or six of them in the area sniffing around. They had a big white tent set up on the opposite bank on the north side. And it was police officers and feds, because back then the feds used to drive those black Wagoneers, and they had two of those sitting there. So, and also heard didn't see a helicopter, but I heard it. This is very interesting, very shocking. All these people showed up at one time. I did find out later that there had been a report the same day in Marysville, which is about 3 miles downstream from where I was. And some woman had made a call in that she saw this thing. But why the authorities reacted the way they did, I really never have gotten an answer to that.
Yeah, that's not a very common official or government response to a sighting report. What makes you think they responded that way? You must have some suspicions.
Yeah, I do. That part of the country, you know, the Baltimore, Washington metro area, there's a lot of government facilities that we really have no idea what's going on there. And along that Patapsco River, there are a number of places that seem to be facilities, but we're not quite sure what they are or what they were.
Right.
I don't know if this thing had possibly been something that has escaped or got away from them. Hmm. But, their response was just drastic. And, it made a big uproar. But the thing is, after it happened, I had called the television stations in Baltimore, three of them at the time, about what was going on. They were really interested. They wanted to talk to me, but they wanted to get some insight. Well, I got back to them eventually about 4 days later, and none of them wanted to talk to me. And in fact, the local police department, Sykesville Police Department, had no record of my call and didn't even want to talk about it either. Though I did have a local police officer tell me years later that he was in on the search and he verified everything that happened. So it was hushed up, and but I still don't know what really happened.
I'm not going to ask you how you knew it was definitely a male, but when you had this when you had this eye to eye contact with this creature, did you feel threatened at all?
No, I didn't feel threatened. I was just shocked more than anything else. And the weird thing was, it was making a kind of a ticking sound, which I found out later it was most likely gnashing its teeth. I've heard give that description as well. And there was a slight odor, even though it was maybe 40, 50 feet away from me. It was kind of like a fox urine smell. So I assume it came from that, but I wasn't sure. But no, I didn't really feel threatened. I was just shocked.
And after that event, it was only a few years later that you had another incident where you encountered a winged creature. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I in 1988, it was the fall of 1988, I was still living in near Baltimore. I happened to run into a friend of mine, somebody I went to school with and was in Boy Scouts with together. And I ran into him in Baltimore, and we sat down, had lunch, and we were talking. And he was actually aware of my paranormal interest, because when we were kids, he and I used to sneak on the battlefield and camp out.
Oh, cool.
Night.
Yeah.
So he was aware of what was going on, and we experienced a few things together over those years. So anyway, he was telling me, he said, you know, look, there's been some things going on at Camp Conewago. Some of the troops for the past couple of months have been experiencing some strange things, but in particular, they've been hearing these loud screeching sounds. And it scared a bunch of them out of the woods, and they packed up and left. And he said, a friend of mine and I are going to be going there next weekend and wanted to know if I wanted to tag along. I said, sure. So, of course, we met the next Friday at Camp Conewago. Now, this campsite is in Adams County, Pennsylvania, not far from where I live now. And, you know, I was very familiar with the place. You spent a lot of time there as a kid. Well, anyway, we got, you know, I met up with these guys, and we, you know, hiked into the woods and set up camp, and we were all set up. I had three tents, had a fire going, I guess, about 6 or 7 in the evening. So by that time, we decided to stick around and see if we, you know, hear anything, see anything, or whatever. So it was an uneventful night. We, next morning when we all woke up, we were sitting around the fire, and his friend told me, and he said, did you hear something moving about in the campsite? And I did. I had heard footsteps, but I thought it was just one of those guys getting up to relieve themselves or whatever. And I didn't think much about it, but there was nothing disturbed in the campsite. So, you know, we didn't give it a second thought. So anyway, we spent the whole day going in and out to the woods. We hiked a long way. In fact, we were going about 6 hours, maybe. And when we got back to camp, we, you know, got the fire going again, started making dinner. And we spent most of the evening sitting around talking about football, I think. And I guess it was getting late. And we heard this screeching sound about 11 o'clock that night. And at first, you know, I thought it was maybe an animal or something. You know, there's a lot of game around there. So. But, you know, we were waiting for it to happen again. Well, a little bit later, it did. And this time it sounded like a child screaming. It was that distinct. And,
really?
We were kind of freaked by that. And so we decided then that we were going to stay up the night, maybe see something, hear some more. So we did. So we were sitting around the fire talking, and I guess about a little before one, it was a couple hours after the first time, I got up and started walking around and just stretched my legs. And I got this feeling like something was watching us. You know, I didn't see anything, but I had this feeling.
You sensed it, yeah.
Yeah, and I went back to the fire. I told those guys, look, let's get up and go up the trail a bit. You know, I just had a feeling maybe, you know, something was hanging about. So we got our flashlights, got on the trail, and, you know, we were not more than 50 foot away from the campsite, and we all noticed at the same time these two red eyes standing. Something was standing in the creek. Ooh. To our right. And the creek was really shallow, and there was enough moonlight that we could make out a dark figure standing in the creek. We estimate it was about 6 foot in height. But these real bright red eyes were looking our direction. And by the time we got the flashlights on this thing, it just suddenly swooshed, jettisoned up into the air quickly. And as it reached its apex, it let out a scream. And then screamed again and took off as we, you know, we could hear it fading
and
away.
And that was the same sound you had heard previously? Could you connect it?
Yeah, the exact same sound. And so we got back to the campsite. We're sitting around. We were all shook up. But my friend, he was definitely shook. He wasn't even talking. So the other guy and I were talking. He said, "You noticed anything on its back?" And I did. I had noticed some structures on its back, but I never saw any wings unfold or unfurl. So, and if it, you know, they were there, but I don't think it had anything to do with this thing being able to jettison straight up in the air as quickly as it did. It was really bizarre. So eventually those two left the area. They left the campsite. They wanted to sleep up in the administration building on the campground. Mm-hmm. I stuck around. I wanted to see what this thing was. I was hoping it would come back. But it didn't. You know, the rest of the night was uneventful. So, you know, that happened in 88. You know, I started the blog in 2005. Now, I'd only told a few people about this at the time. So I started the blog in 2005. And around 2008, I wrote an article about the incident. And when I did that, I got some response. I had a gentleman who lived upstream from the location at a place called Dick's Dam. And he was saying that he had been hearing this screaming for years. Now, this was like 20 years after my encounter. So not long after he contacted me, I got another email from a scoutmaster who told me that he and his troop had been at Camp Caughnawaga, not far from where we had camped out, had been there, and his scouts had been out hiking on the trail. And they came running back swearing they saw what they called a dragon. And, you know, he thought they were playing games when he pulled his leg. And he didn't give it much thought, but he did say that they were shook. So he thought they may have seen something natural and just, you know, didn't understand what it was. But when he saw what I had posted, then he started thinking about it. And now since that time, I've had five other reports along the Caughnawaga Creek. The creek extends another 15 miles. It goes west and east, turns around east, and goes into the Susquehanna River. And I've had five other sightings along that stretch over the years. So, and I think the last sighting was about 3 years ago.
Well, I'm not sure if you're aware of this. You probably are, but where I am in Cooperstown, New York, is actually the where the Susquehanna River starts.
Right.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the screeching sound, though, because one of the things that some of the reports of the Mothman sightings relate to is an owl-like form. Owls screech. Do you make any connection there?
You know, I don't know. As far as what I've heard, you know, from previous Mothman sightings and the screeching sounds, I've never really had that comparison. Though in Chicago, when people started seeing these in 2017, there were mentions of screeching sounds, but none of them had mentioned anything about sounding like an owl, even though it's a couple of sightings. They just did describe this as looking like a large owl.
Right. This area of the country that we're talking about, besides your sightings, is it prone to sightings like this?
What, in South Central Pennsylvania?
South Central Pennsylvania and down into Maryland.
Yeah. There are a lot of weird things going around here. Another investigator who lives near me is Timothy Renner. And he's part of the Phantoms of Monsters Fortune research team as well. But he's an independent researcher, and he also writes several books. And he has documented a lot of weird stuff as well. So, yeah, there have been several winged humanoid sightings in this general area for years. Bigfoot sightings, upright canine sightings. Yeah, it does. It kind of runs the gamut, but this, you know, particularly along the Susquehanna River from where it, you know, from York County down across the border into Hartford County, there have been a lot of sightings of, especially Bigfoot, over the years.
Now, as you started to become interested in these winged creatures, winged cryptids specifically, did you maintain a focus on humanoid type, or did you just anything that had wings on it that was a little bit odd you looked into?
Yeah, I looked into everything. I wasn't picky about what I was taking as far as reports go. And as you can see in the book, all those cases in the book were actual reports sent to me and reports I actually looked into. So, yeah, there have been quite a few over the years.
Can you give me an idea of kind of the division of sightings? Is it mostly humanoid-type winged creatures, or is it split 50-50, or how does it divide up?
I would say more recently it's been more humanoid. And, of course, you know, that seems to be the thing going on now. I mean, these sightings and stuff kind of work in cycles. But, you know, before that, it was most likely either a Thunderbird-type sighting, large bird,
right?
Possibly a pterosaur-like being. But I'd say more recently, the past 4 or 5 years, it's been winged humanoids.
When you look back in the history of these types of sightings, how far back do these winged creatures appear in sighting reports, or even maybe some kind of mythology, and specifically the humanoid kind?
No, it goes back a long way. There have been a lot of, you know, people talk about the Mothman as being a harbinger, like what, you know, associated right. with the Silver Bridge collapse in Point Pleasant.
Right.
But there have been other reports over the years. You know, I think most of those historical reports refer to these things as either demons or even angels, as opposed to anything else.
Right.
And, you know, there's usually been a spiritual connotation to it. Many times they really didn't give it a physical aspect, but more of a non-corporeal aspect. But, you know, there are some that are fairly interesting. You know, some of the older stories that go back into antiquity. But, yeah, it's mostly something to do spiritually.
You know, a lot of the descriptions of these creatures tend to incorporate or observe bat-like features. Is that common?
Yeah, that's more common than it had been. Yes, it is. And why that is kind of strange. You know, when we started getting the reports out of Chicago, in fact, there had been 3 reports in Chicago in 2011. And the wing structure was somewhat different than what people have been describing recently. And some of the early reports in 2017 were either like insectoid or mothman or moth-like wing structure. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of evolved into the owl wing structure. We had a few of those reports. But then beyond that, it was mostly the gargoyle bat wing structured wing.
Do you think there's any significance to whether it's a bat-like wing or it is a moth-like wing or whatever it happens to be? Do you think that people are interpreting them differently? It might be the same creatures, or do you think these are completely different creatures?
Yeah, I think it could very well be the same thing. You know, people interpret things much differently than others. I guess it's all perspective, but it is interesting when you get. And this is one thing about Chicago that interested me. You know, certain areas of the city where there'd be sightings because of the socioeconomic makeout of that area, in particular like Little Mexico or Little Village. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of sightings there, mostly Hispanic population, and these witnesses were calling it a devil or you know, some kind of a demon for the most part. Those were all the bat wing, you know, type of sightings. We even got sketches of these things. Then, you know, others in other parts of the city really didn't know what they were looking at. Very few of them called it demons. The one description that did kind of stick out for most sightings, and not only in Chicago, is this connection with what the Jeepers Creepers creature looked like.
Oh, yeah.
From the movie. Mm-hmm. And I've had many Even my other, there are other researchers have had many connections with that type of being. So, you know, I don't know if it was the same being. I do believe at the time in 2017, we were talking about at least three different beings, three different creatures that were showing up in different areas. So, you know, because there did seem to be a few differences, but nothing very major.
What's your interpretation before we get too much further here? I want to know what your opinion is as to the origin of these creatures. First of all, do you think they're flesh and blood? And if they are or aren't, do you think they're somehow supernatural?
I think they are flesh and blood. I think they're supernatural. Now, when I say supernatural, I mean that in a way that I don't think they're indigenous, but they're able to come into our earth plane, our reality, from another one. Now, how they do that, I don't know. That's the enigma. And of course, you know, when you had witnesses who state to you that they have seen these things literally disappear like it went through an invisible doorway, then you got to kind of really think it out that, you know, maybe there is something very supernatural about this phenomena.
You brought up the word evil. I know other people have brought up the word evil, demonic.
Yeah.
Do you associate any of those words with these things from your perspective?
You know, nothing that I have seen so far even suggests that they're evil. Why they're here, you know, that we don't know. Are they a summoned being? Are they like a sentinel of some type? Or, you know, are they just curious? I don't know. But they, you know, I don't believe that they're evil at all.
Some suggest that the Mothman was trying to warn people of the collapse of the impending collapse of the Silver Bridge. Others blame the Mothman for the collapse of the Silver Bridge. Let's go with the blame crowd for a second. If the Mothman was truly responsible for that disaster, then you could maybe put some evil in there.
Yeah, if I believed that was what happened, yeah. But I don't think that's what happened. I don't buy into the Harbinger theory, Portent of Doom theory. You know, there had been sightings in and around the Point Pleasant area for about a year before the bridge collapsed. And I believe when this tragedy did happen, being in a small town where 46 people died as a result, I think most people were kind of looking for an excuse or something to explain why it actually happened.
Yeah.
So you think that? Yeah, go ahead.
No, I want you to continue with your thought, but you think it was just a coincidence?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And, you know, there have been other incidents of disasters where people kind of after the fact stated, oh, I saw this or saw that
right
beforehand, like Fukushima. The bridge collapse in Minneapolis. The only instance that I can find where there was actually sightings of a winged being was the Blackbird of Chernobyl. And those were documented sightings. I mean, this large black bird-like entity was seen flying over the reactor days before the accident. So was that attributed to it? Maybe. Was that a warning? It could have been, but that's the only one I can really find that has any type of connection to the actual disaster.
As far as the Mothman story goes, again, it's the one I'm most familiar with, and it seems to be kind of the anchor that a lot of these other stories refer to. Where do you think it ranks in terms of credibility and significance among all of the sighting stories that you have researched and collected?
Oh, I think it's credible. I think people actually did encounter this being, especially those that encountered it at the West Virginia Ordnance Works, what people call the TNT plant.
Yeah.
I think they really did. Now, this being was somewhat aggressive. It actually seemed to come after the people involved and actually chased their car on a couple occasions. The Mothman of Point Pleasant, in my opinion, was a summoned being. And I say that because of the heavy spiritual activity that is still there, was there, has been there for years. And, you know, over the years, I have heard EVPs in the area, looked at evidence from other people. I believe there was a very strong energy, let's put it that way, that summoned this being as a protector or a sentinel of some type. And, you know, people may not know this, but these Mothman-like creatures are still seen in and around Point Pleasant.
I don't think people hear that very often anymore, but the million-dollar question here becomes, and I don't know if you have a theory on this, but if the Mothman was summoned by whom?
A strong indigenous spirit, most likely from one of the tribes that lived in the area.
So do you think it was some type of, you said sentinel, but do you think that this was maybe a revenge move for what was happening in the area from as the land was stolen from native populations?
Possibly. Hmm. Yeah, possibly.
That's a really interesting theory. I imagine, you know, you know more about those indigenous people than I do, but are they still located in the area?
No. Actually, the majority of the Indian tribes that had been there, and there were quite a few over the years, but at the time of the colonial settlements and some of the warring between tribes, was mostly Shawnee. And the Shawnee actually came out of Pennsylvania, moved westward into Ohio, into West Virginia, and they've moved off since then. There are several small reservations, but most of the Shawnee have intermingled with other tribes. But that was the tribe that had most of the history in the area, and I believe that's the where this spirit is coming from.
As you look back at some of these descriptions that we talked about earlier, some of these creatures with bat-like features, some with owl-like features, some with neither of the above, but other things. Do you think there's any shape-shifting going on here?
It's possible. You know, there are several shape-shifting type entities that people have described or seen over the years. I guess the biggest one in particular would be like the skinwalker, which is basically a witch that transforms into another being. There are people that associate most cryptids with some type of shape-shifting abilities. I believe it's possible. I don't really have much evidence to prove that, but you know, I'm kind of open to everything at this point, and you know, it may possibly happen.
Well, you got to have an open mind about this stuff, right? I mean, if you start investigating with a closed mind, you never recognize the truth when you come across it.
And I think the only way that we're going to get answers to a lot of this phenomena is keeping an open mind.
Let's talk about Chicago specifically, because it seems to be a particularly active location for some of this stuff. What's been going on there?
Well, we had the three sightings in 2011. Those sightings were reported to MUFON, and the information that we had was only that was provided to MUFON. Then in 2017, MUFON received several sighting reports, which you could see it on their CMS system, but you couldn't really get much personal information or have the ability to go talk to them. We were able to track at least two of those witnesses down and eventually talk to them. And as time went by, we started receiving the reports directly. We made it known that, you know, we were taking reports, and we got the bulk of the reports from what I can see, because quite frankly, I had, you know, after over 100 sighting reports that we believe are credible, I don't really see a whole lot being reported by anybody else. So, when you get that many reports, you got to wonder how many people aren't actually reporting it. So I'm quite confident that there have been a lot of sightings that we just never heard of.
Yeah, I mean, I know in certain instances, there's like a factor of 100. You know, for every one person that reports it, there are 99 that didn't. I don't know if that holds true with something like this, but there's certainly a large part of the population that, for whatever reason, in a lot of cases, they don't want to be ridiculed, won't report something like this.
Oh, sure. That happens a lot. You know, the sightings in Chicago are very distinct and interesting for a number of reasons, but mostly because when we did get a report, and many times it was right after the incident, that they would find us by Googling wings, whatever, on Google, and our name would pop up, and they'd contact us right away. And the most interesting part of the sighting reports was that when they gave you the information of what they saw, they did not embellish on it. And that's something that very rarely happens in cryptid reports and research. I even tried to get people to expound on what they saw, and they wouldn't do it. So they were very credible.
And what do you think the reason is for them to act slightly out of character in that respect?
Well, you know, that's one thing we have really been pondering. I don't know if these witnesses have had something imprinted on them during the encounter, but it's mostly a very profound reaction to what they have seen. Sometimes they get a feeling of, dread, that it seems very important that they let someone know what they saw, but, you know, they never embellished on the sighting report. And many times these witnesses allowed me to have other team members talk to them as well. So, you know, a lot of times that's not even possible.
Recently, and I know it's, recently is a term that can be used in a lot of different ways, but these sightings continue. And there's actually been some near O'Hare Airport, which might be a little bit concerning, but what's the deal with that stuff?
Well, it seems since October of last year, most of the reports coming out of the Chicago area have happened either in Rosemont, which is a northeast suburb of the airport,
yep,
and on the airport grounds themselves. And they've been some very profound sightings, and close and personal as well. And some of them have possibly had some extraterrestrial involvement with it. So, you know, we're kind of, you know, we had some thoughts that maybe there may be some non-terrestrial activity, or that these may be non-terrestrials. But after the one sighting in particular, where the woman said that she saw this winged being with a gray alien and two other female humanoids, it kind of got us thinking a bit about it. So, there have been a few things that have kind of got us thinking in some other directions.
Yeah. I mean, you've just opened up a whole new door here. When you start, merging these two phenomena and you're talking about winged cryptids and extraterrestrial origins, that opens up a whole bunch of possibilities.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's kind of made its way into other winged cryptid sightings, but not to the degree that these sightings have. And especially around O'Hara, because it has a history of UFO activity. And one of the recent UFO sightings, I believe, may be actually associated with these humanoids.
I mean, you know, that's not necessarily something that we should dismiss in any way, because let's face it, if we are having these UFO sightings, we don't know what's piloting those. We don't know what kind of creature. It very well could be a winged cryptid type creature. And then when we have people saying, yeah, well, have you ever seen an alien running around? They say no, but we've seen winged cryptids. Well, what's to say those aren't extraterrestrial in origin?
Exactly. And you know, the more recent UFO sighting at O'Hara was, I think it was March. I'm not quite sure what month it was, but this gentleman who had a who was in, you know, working a cargo worker, and he was out on a smoke break. Now this was on the western side of O'Hara, but this cargo area was near, and many people don't know this, there's a small cemetery in O'Hara. It's called Rest Haven Cemetery. It's a very small cemetery. But this cargo area was near this cemetery, and he was outside having a smoke, and he noticed this very bright oval UFO suddenly appear above the cemetery. And as he watched this thing, some humanoid of some origin literally ascended up into the UFO. And of course, we asked him, well, did this thing have wings? And he's, you know, he couldn't tell if it did or not. Mm-hmm. But he said it was definitely humanoid. And, you know, he was out in the middle of the cemetery in O'Hara at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, being abducted. And that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, I really believe that this has some type of connection with what people are seeing. And as far as winged humanoid sightings on the airport grounds itself, there have been reports, incredible reports, because one of them came from a TSA security guy, and the other came from a security officer for one of the cargo companies. And they've seen these things. And, you know, they're shocked by what they're seeing, and but they're very credible witnesses. The O'Hara management has tried to downplay this whole scenario from the very beginning. They keep telling people that they must have seen a large owl. You know, I've had people that have been told this who work at O'Hara. They're telling their employees and TSA people and everything not to mention it. But we're lucky. We've been lucky enough to have a few people come forward and tell us what's being seen.
I find it interesting that your initial encounter, the first time you had an encounter with a winged cryptid type creature, you said that it took off. It basically went straight up, and you couldn't explain that by a pair of wings flapping. And now we're talking about an extraterrestrial connection. I'm starting to see a pattern.
Well, and when people do see in the Chicago sightings, most of these sightings, these beings actually ascend the same way. It's just like they're a little rocket jumping up, you know, going into the air. They very rarely use their wings at all. So, you know, when you talk supernatural, well, I believe that's supernatural. There's something there.
Yeah, it is. And I have to pass on a question from our chat room as well. And I know you kind of touched on this. You mentioned the word anyway. What about the possibility that there is an angelic connection to this?
I don't know. You know, if you do read the book, there have been people that have described these winged cryptids as angels or large angels. But as far as what's going on in Chicago, I haven't really found any angelic entity type connection there. It's possible, since we really have no answers to what these things are, but I don't believe that's what it is.
It seems a little odd for, if they were angels in some form, to present themselves that way, because even if they're not intending to be evil, if these creatures are benevolent, but they have a menacing look to them, and it seems like an odd way for an angel to present itself.
Yeah, they don't show much benevolence, but then of course they're not benevolent either. So
right.
They just seem to be kind of curious, and why they're here, we don't know. We haven't been, another interesting thing, we haven't been receiving reports of attacks. Something that's very aggressive. We had one report where it landed on the hood of a couple. It was kind of scratching the windshield trying to get in from what they determined.
Ooh.
But that's about as close as it gets. We haven't had reports of animals missing in the city, pets and such, that they've been, grabbing, feeding on or whatever. None of that. I mean, these sightings are fleeting sightings. They happen and they're gone. And that's why we're not getting photographs. Some are at night, some are during the day, but they're just fleeting sightings. And by the time the witness, comes out of the fog of shock, they don't have time to grab for a phone and take a photograph. These things are gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be the case in a lot of this type of thing. It happens so quickly. There's just no time. Everybody says everybody's carrying a cell phone with a camera. Why can't they get a picture? There's just no time. And you have to also account for that initial startled emotion that it takes you a second to gather yourself before you can even think about a camera.
Exactly. I get complaints about that all the time, but. If you really think about it, and it happens in other type of cryptid sightings, even Bigfoot, very rarely a close encounter is going to result in a photograph because of the shock value.
Interesting. Why write the book? I mean, you've done a lot of research on this, so I suppose these are stories you just felt needed to be told, and people have to start paying attention to this stuff.
That's most of the reason why I write my books, to kind of make people aware of what's been going on. For the most part, I try to concentrate on cases and sightings that have been reported to me. That's the instance in this book. These are all cases that I have been involved with or have had personally or something, that I've worked with the eyewitnesses or talked to the eyewitnesses. So I thought, this phenomenon needed to have a little more light put on it. I did write the Mothman Dynasty book about the Chicago humanoids, which covered the first year of the sightings. And, after writing an alien disclosure book with, cases I had worked on with people, I decided that the Winged Cryptid book was kind of a next step for the Mothman Dynasty book. So I covered the winged humanoid sightings in and around Chicago up until recent times. And then I put in other phenomena, winged phenomena, that I've been associated with.
One of our chatters also asked the question about Thunderbirds. Any recent sightings or relatively recent sightings of Thunderbird-type creatures?
Not really. We do get an occasional sighting. Most of the sightings either come out of Western Pennsylvania, the upper Midwest, and Texas. That seemed to be the hot spots for that type of activity. But as far as actual Thunderbird sightings, they seem to be somewhat sparse.
Yeah, they do. We don't hear about them nearly as much. I know you've researched and written about other cryptid phenomena as well. And I want to go back to this concept of evil. Because one of the cryptids, and you mentioned this particular one a couple times tonight already, is these bipedal canines, dogmen, if you will. Every time I hear someone who has had an experience with a dogman sighting, they always talk about a very deep sense of foreboding and menacing from these creatures. Have you heard the same thing?
Yeah, we've been investigating this phenomena nationwide, but in particular here in Pennsylvania. And these entities, and I describe them as upright canines, because there's a lot of different types of sightings, and some people call them dogmen or dogman or
right.
Something else. I just call them upright canines. Most of what I describe as dogman is basically a quadruped. And that looks somewhat different.
Okay.
Has like a hyena look to it.
Mm-hmm.
We do get those up here. But moreover, the upright canines, the bipedal canines, these are huge creatures. And I'm talking anywhere from 8 to 10 foot in height, very broad shoulder, thin torso, muscular arms and legs, very menacing.
Yeah.
And large wolf-like heads. They can be a bit aggressive, but the one aspect to them is that they hold their ground. It's right. Not like a Bigfoot that'll run off. They will stand their ground. And I've had actual hunters that have been armed walk up on these creatures and just literally back away. Don't even think twice about taking a shot at it.
And do
so
they,
I don't know if it has something to do with some type of abilities that these upright canines have to kind of alleviate them from thinking they ought to take a shot at it. I think the mere presence of these things is enough to have someone back off.
Do they travel in packs like wolves or coyotes or something would?
These seem to be sedentary, you know, I mean, excuse me. They, you know, we talk about the lone wolf theory. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're mostly, they're kind of singular for the most part. Very rarely you're here or more than one. I recently had a report down in Louisiana of two. There was a specific part of Louisiana where there have been a couple of sightings recently. And one of those sightings involved two upright canines. But moreover, it doesn't happen. It's mostly one being at a time.
And what about the idea that any of these could be some type of shape-shifting werewolf-type creature?
Well, it's possible, I suppose. You know, I'm not going to come right out and say, we got werewolves. But, you know, like I said before about the skinwalkers, and, of course, some of these sightings, these beings do seem to have, like, a supernatural aspect to them. They either have a gleam to it or kind of an aura to it that kind of seems like it may be something other than a indigenous being. But honestly, I haven't heard of any werewolves with clothes or anything like that being seen.
Yeah, right.
I think, you know, as far as the wolfman, you know, werewolf phenomena, I don't think that's what's going on. You know, as far as what these things actually are, again, this may be an interdimensional species, because we have had reports where they just suddenly show up and don't even seem to be aware of their surrounding when they do show up. So this may very well be another interdimensional entity.
We've talked about these winged cryptids. We've talked about canine-type cryptids. What other creatures have you been keeping, you and your team, actually, been keeping an eye out for and taking reports on?
Well, more recently, these pale humanoids, mostly tall, emaciated pale humanoid sightings that have been popping up all over the place in recent years. Some people think they're wendigos. Some people call them rakes, flesh gates, crawlers. They have all assortment of names. And they do have some differences, but for the most part, they seem to be either 6 to 7 foot in height, very thin, hairless, with large bald heads. Some do seem to be have issues with moving about. They don't seem to be aggressive, but then again, they don't really seem to be bothered by people either. So, you know, this is something we're really starting to look into recently. We've had some reports here in Pennsylvania, but I've had reports all over the country as well. So Are they Wendigos? You know, that's a possibility. I mean, this Wendigo, we know the Wendigo is a supernatural being. From most accounts, they're like a cannibalistic, flesh-eating being that is much more aggressive than what we've been seeing.
We have a lot of people that contact the program who have had encounters of one kind or another themselves. If they want to share their story with you, how would they do it?
It's pretty easy. All they got to do is either send me an email at LonStrickler@phantomsandmonsters.com or even call my number, which is 410-241-5974, or they can go to the website, phantomsandmonsters.com, and click on the link to contact me.
Lon, you've done more work than just on cryptids. Tell me about your alien disclosure book.
Well, I have been working with alien experiencers for many years now. A few in particular, people who have had either abduction accounts or have been abducted. It's kind of hard for these people to get their stories out. MUFON will only do that to a certain degree. That kind of leaves people hanging, so they usually find someone else that will listen to the story and actually do the investigations. That's usually where I come in at. And I've been involved with quite a number over the years. Some pretty scary ones as well. It's, some of these encounters have been benevolent, where people have been cured of diseases or maladies. That has happened and does happen. But there are other instances where people have been experimented on, have been taken to like a laboratory situation aboard either craft or someplace else. Many times it's uncertain, and have been looked at or explored, or I hate to say the word
probed.
But,
go ahead.
Yeah, probed. But it varies. But it does happen. And there have been a lot of stories as far as what people have seen over the years. And, I've kind of collected most. And I decided at the time I was going to write something that included all the these encounters that I've been involved with. And that's why Alien Disclosure, Experiences Exposed Reality was written.
Are these encounters, alien encounters that people are reporting, are they increasing, decreasing in frequency, or staying about the same?
I don't really know. I don't get a lot of them, but it seems the ones I do get are pretty intense. You read about these all the time. I think a lot of people believe that they've had experiences like this and just really haven't. I've received a lot of them over the years where it just didn't add up. But there have been a few that have left an impression on me.
We seem to have been turning a corner on some of these things. I mean, as far as attitudes in the public, and as you mentioned, 20, 30 years ago, almost no one would come forward with these stories because they were afraid of ridicule. I think that if there's any benefit to some of these reality programs on television, is they're starting to make people realize that they're not alone and they can start talking about some of this stuff.
Yeah, that's the overall impression. I'm not saying that the production quality of a lot of these shows is that great, but
right.
It kind of does allow people to think that, well, maybe I can come forward and tell my story. And I think the internet and these TV programs have done that. I know people have held stories for decades. And because of the changing in attitude now, they have finally come forward. I get that a lot. There have been people that have had been living with these encounters, not knowing what had happened or had no explanation and no real outlet. And they're starting to come forward now.
A lot of people think that there's actually a significant change in the government as well, as the military releases videos and no longer tries to explain them away, although they don't go as far as saying these are extraterrestrial. They say they are definitely unidentified and we can't explain them, which gives those who are looking for some type of acknowledgement from the military that these exist as a very large step forward. What do you think? Do you think the government's starting to change and maybe offer this drip of disclosure?
Yeah, it's drip dip. It's mostly being spoon fed, I think. There's a lot of stuff that has happened that they could come forward with. They've only had two decent disclosures in recent years. But when it comes to actual encounters in alien abduction, they're mum about that. That's just not going to, and that they're just not going to disclose that. Those type of encounters will not be disclosed unless they absolutely have to start doing it for some reason. I just don't believe the government's going to come forward on that because they just, in my opinion, know too much.
And when you say the government disclosing this stuff, do you mean that they have information about humans that have been abducted and they won't disclose that? Or are you talking about the government actually having possession of extraterrestrial bodies and evidence?
Both.
Okay.
Definitely both. I think, let's take Roswell, for instance. Now, Roswell, I believe, did actually happen, but the follow-up, I don't believe, was the truth. I don't believe the bodies were taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I do have an idea where they were taken to, though for obvious reasons, I don't want to really say a whole lot. But I have had some confirmation that proves to me that there are other government facilities where they have been taken at, where either bodies or even craft and other evidence has been collected. And there's a lot that we're not being told as far as that goes. As far as people being allowed to be abducted, I don't know. You hear a lot of different theories about that. I think the government, most governments, are quite aware of that. I think there has been some cooperation between the governments and these beings in some degree. But any specific information is just not really available. It's all speculation for the most part.
So when you say governments are collaborating, do you mean they're collaborating in cover up or withholding information?
Both, maybe.
Yeah,
both. And I think it's just not the United States either. I mean, most major powers have had their thumb in this to some degree.
I'm always waiting for like a second or third world government to get some kind of knowledge and to not care that the first world nations don't want it released and actually release something. I don't know if that's possible, that's going to happen, but
that may happen. That may actually happen at some point. Some of the Latin American countries, especially in South America, have released a lot of very interesting information over the years. But from people I have talked to in those areas, there have been pushback by especially NASA and the U.S. government. So, they may initially try to get the information out there, but it's usually shut up pretty quickly.
Right. Lon, we're almost out of time here. What do you've got working on next? I know the Winged Creatures book is, Winged Cryptids book is basically new, but I know you always got a project in the works.
Well, I just uploaded it today. We were releasing a second edition of the Mothman Dynasty Chicago Wings humanoid book. That'll be available for sale. That's been updated a bit. As far as next book, I don't know. You know, I've been wanting to do something about the upright canines, especially what we've been working on here in Pennsylvania. But this other humanoid, these humanoids that people are seeing is very intriguing. And there are more and more sightings and more information being disclosed each day. So it's either going to be one of those, but then again, when something else happens, it may go to that. That's happened to me so many times now. That alien disclosure book was sitting on the shelf for about 5 or 6 years before I finally had the time to write it, because I found a window to do it because something else wasn't going on. But there does seem to be a lot going on all the time here. You know, I've been doing this now for 40 years, and I'm really shocked about what I hear. I mean, there's something new coming up, but, you know, it doesn't really surprise me. We do live in a weird world and in weird times now.
And there's always something weird to talk about and report, right? Always.
Oh, yeah. There's always seems to be something that, you know, you can kind of delve into and try to figure out what's going on. I'm not saying you're going to be successful, but, you know, we just try to do what we can.
Well, you're doing a great job, a lot of great work, Lon, and we appreciate you sharing it with us in the form of your books and also coming on the program here to talk about it. Keep us informed with what you've got next, because we always want to hear about it.
Oh, sounds good. I'll let you know.
And the website, again, phantomsandmonsters.com. Almost everything we talked about tonight can be found there. People can get information about the books and your other work, right?
Yeah, it's all there.
Terrific. Thanks for your time, and we'll have you back real soon.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by J.V. Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal, or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y, at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.